On today's complicated conversation, we welcome Suzanne Park. Suzanne is a Korean-American writer who was born and raised in Tennessee. She is the author of the adult novels The Do-Over, So We Meet Again, and Loathe at First Sight. As a comedian, she was selected to appear on BET's Coming to the Stage. Suzanne was also the winner of the Seattle Sierra Mist Comedy Competition and was a semifinalist in NBC's Stand Up for Diversity Showcase. Suzanne graduated from Columbia University and received an MBA from UCLA. She currently resides in Los Angeles with her husband, female offspring, and a sneaky rat that creeps around on her back patio. Very concerned about that, Suzanne. But anyway, why is the rat there? Okay. In her spare time, which I also love, she procrastinates.
That was my favorite.
Yeah, yes. Her new novel, One Last Word, is out now. Welcome to Pop Fiction Women, Suzanne.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Excellent. Well, why don't you start by giving our listeners the elevator pitch for One Last Word?
Yes, I'd be happy to. So the novel follows Sarah Che. She is an app developer, and she creates an app called One Last Word, which allows you to send your last words to anyone you want after you pass. And one day, another Sarah Che passes away, and then the app developers drunkenly drafted messages in her outbox all get sent out, and they're released into the world. So now she has to deal with the messages and the aftermath that she sent to her ex-best friend, her overbearing parents, and her unrequited crush, Harry Shim. Later on, while she's trying to pitch her business to a bunch of mentorship programs and trying to get funding, she finds out that the VC mentorship she applied to, she's accepted into the program, and finds out that her mentor, of course, is Harry Shim, the guy she sent the message to.
Love that.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah, it's such a great concept. I mean, we all have had that feeling of wanting the last word, and I don't want to hear what you have to say. And this is, a way to do that. But then also, what if that comes back to kind of bite you?
Literally.
Yeah, exactly. So we want to start with Sarah. We love a female protagonist that is at a crossroads. At this point, she has quit her job. She's moved in with her sister. She's trying to basically single-handedly create this app that you've already talked about. And her arc, her need to grow, is around advocating for herself. So tell us about the development of Sarah, what inspired her, what challenges you had in writing her.
So this book was primarily conceived during the pandemic, and much like many books coming out right now. And most of my adult books have focused on women in male-dominated workplaces. So in the past, I've written about gaming, investment banking, entrepreneurship, and also publishing. But also for this book, I had read a lot about venture capital, and especially during the pandemic, I was hearing a lot about it, and had read memoirs, the memoir by Ellen Pao, Reset, about the toxicity of tech. All that during early COVID, and after doing some research around whether it had changed over the years, because there was just a lot of Me Too allegations in 2017, I believe, in the VC industry. And I was wondering how much it had changed. And, 4 or 5 years later, the more that I read, it had in some ways, but not in the ways as much as it should have. So, of course, that became something of interest to me then. I started reaching out to people who had been in the startup world, at tech companies, and also people who are on the VC side, and started to interview them and ask them what their experiences were. And as I started chatting with them and coming up with questions and going deeper into kind of where all of this is coming from, it's so deeply rooted into the industry, the toxicity and the bias, that I felt like this was the perfect industry that I wanted to write about and set Sarah up for success in. So One Last Word came about from just learning a lot about the VC market. And then also just during that time, I think I had wanted to write it, a book that focused mostly on what adulting is like for a 34-year-old, because I think each of my protagonists with each book I've released has gotten a little bit older. You know, they were in their 20s in my first two books, and now in the 30s in the last two books. She's 34, so she's dealing with sort of where she is in her career, also feeling like, you know, where she should be in her career right now at age 34. So in the book, you'll see themes of conflict avoidance and resolution, difficult conversations versus letting things fester. Also, just adulting in general, like how can you be 34 and still feel like that you don't know what you're doing? I feel like that is a huge thing that people are mistaken by, thinking like, oh, as soon as you turn to X age, you've figured it all out. And I just think that it just never ends. You're always figuring things out.
I was going to say.
I wanted to include themes of that as well.
But I was guilty of that. I was one of those people who thought at a certain point, I will feel like I am adulting. And to some extent, maybe I was, but you don't get there. There's no adult threshold.
No.
Not at all. And
The questioning never ends. That's absolutely true, no matter what age. You also mentioned a theme that I want to touch on, which is about communication. So the app, as you said, is called One Last Word. And to me, it's just like the very idea that we would need this app as people, because we aren't able to say the things that we want to say when we're living, felt very spot on. So I was curious how you came up with the idea for this app and what you wanted to explore around technology and authentic communication.
Well, it's funny. After I turned in the book and I said, I don't know what you'll think of this, my editor, but here you go, and sent it off to her. And she responded pretty quickly and said, oh, this book feels like To All the Boys I've Loved Before, but the adult version. Just the concept alone. And I hadn't really thought about that, even though that probably was in the back of my mind of what could be sort of the grown-up version of that book, because everybody has the things that they wanted to say, and then they just tuck it away and hopefully never think about it again. But as far as the tech aspect, I have also, when I was researching the VC industry, I did do a lot of research on conflict avoidance and difficult conversations in the workplace. And the more I read, I was like, I feel very targeted. This is exactly me. And, it's not even just what you would read in a women's focused like lifestyle magazine. This is in Harvard Business Review. This is in Forbes magazine. That's not just like the conflict and conversation. That all has to happen both in your personal life and in the workplace. And when I started realizing it's not just like I have my own personal way of communicating and my business way of communicating, they're actually, you know, they're related. So I started becoming very interested in that idea and the fact that when Sarah does send out these messages and then has to deal with the aftermath, oh no, I've sent these messages and now I actually have to, if they respond back, what do I do? And then
you have to engage.
Forced conversation. Yes, you have to engage. And then the fact that she has to do it on in different ways to different people and even work with the other person who also might not be in the right place to have a direct conversation either. It to me felt like, kind of like, how horrible would this be? But also, this could happen, you know, where you are forced into a conversation where you don't actually, you're not prepared, you don't want to have the conversation, but it has to happen. And how does Sarah navigate that? And so she has to deal with this both from a familial perspective, from a friendship perspective, and romantically as well. So it was, as I set up those scenarios, I was like, oh no, then I have to kind of figure out how she's going to resolve it to the end so she feels like there's a satisfying way to end the story, but also that she has that arc where she feels like she's grown as a person.
And that's the one I want to talk about, the family aspect of it. I have certainly grown into a fairly good communicator, but my default and certainly my starting point was in romantic relationships, I'm good at yelling and fighting. And so that has improved over the course of my life, but it was always easier for me to have tough conversations because I was happy to start a fight because I knew how a fight in a romantic relationship played out. We would fight, we would make up, we would kiss, and it would, you know, like there's all like it, there's a beat, a rhythm to it that I was not afraid of. Mm-hmm. Family, my parents, they're, yeah. I am still. It is by far the place I am the least developed. So tell us why you wanted to include that and how you wanted to play that out with Sarah and her parents.
When I thought of the book, I knew, you know, I had to put Sarah through everything because I tend to do that with my characters. Like, what could make this worse? And thinking about, I started with the friendship one where she has her relationship with Naomi. They were best friends through high school and college, and then they have a falling out and then they drift. And since they're best friends, it was one of those things that always hurt her. And, but she just kind of, you know, suppressed that and just didn't come back to it. But given this new opportunity, a second chance to kind of be back in touch with her best friend, ex-best friend, they both had an opportunity to figure out what happened. And then when you hear how each of them saw their falling out, you see that there was a level of miscommunication and also just priorities that were not aligned. And it made me realize that that probably happens a lot, especially as you get older and you have different priorities and you drift apart with a certain friends and then you have new friends. Sometimes when you do have that falling out, and in this case, ghosting, you know, what did cause that? I had a friend in one of my writers groups that said something like this happened when I had written kind of the part that I had submitted to everybody to read about the friendship. And she said that this really did happen to her and she had not figured out why it had happened, but she would love to know what exactly caused the ghosting part of the demise of their friendship. And at that point I realized I had something, like there is something that is relatable there. Possibly this is something that is bigger than just, you know, just my writer group friend and me. I think there's a lot of people who relate to a situation where two friends drift apart, but neither of them sure why. For the romantic relationship, that was a little bit easier, but I did want to make sure that you got his side of the story as well.
Yeah.
Because you can have an unrequited crush and just it not really be anything on the other side. But for him, I wanted to paint a more three-dimensional picture of him and also what happened to him in the past, because he did seem like he cared for her. And but you could see then over time why he made the decisions that he did over the years. With a mom and dad, that was the hardest part to write, I will be honest, because anybody with has, you know, family relationships that are not as straightforward as or just as kind of ideal, it ends up being hard sometimes to have hard conversations. And I think in my life now, I'm ready to talk about things a little bit more openly, more directly. And I don't know if that's because so much time has passed and I'm, you know, I'm over it. The pandemic happened and I'm over it. You know, I don't know if it was that sort of got me into thinking about how I would be a little bit more straightforward with my family. But I think when I wrote my parents, the parents of Sarah in this particular book, I wanted to show them having conversations that were difficult, but not kind of outlandish in that they could never happen. So that it seemed more realistic of like how they would come to more common ground, but not be this like loving family all of a sudden and say, oh, you were right, I was wrong. You know, that just would not happen in Sarah's life. So I just had to make sure that the way they resolved things between them was a realistic and almost attainable for Sarah, that's the thing that would make her be able to move forward.
That is so interesting that you say that maybe the time, enough time has passed. For me, I don't think I realized I needed to have conversations until I had kids. And then I was like, oh, now I'm parenting and I have to reflect on how you parented me. And there's just a huge disconnect. And so it feels like stuff from my childhood suddenly feels fresh. And I'm like, what is happening? This is not supposed to happen to me now. But
when you reflect with a little judgment, I mean, I do at least. Yeah, like, it's like, wait, I'm having these conversations and I'm thinking so hard about how to communicate with my children. And I'm like, I don't think they did that with me. They just told me to get over it. They just told me to do better. Like, you know, then it brings up. I'm like, what
it's
the heck?
It's so true. It is so true.
I do wonder, too, about how my parents, because, you know, I have one child and they have had three, and I was a middle child, so I have my own middle child issues, but
sure.
But I do think, like, do we just not even just parent differently, but do we just think of parenting differently? Because sometimes I just think they didn't even have any worries about second guessing themselves on some of the things that they just decided to do. It just happened, and oh well, I picked you up 2 hours late, or oh no, we missed this thing. The poor planning or whatever it was. And now I would just over worry and set the clock 17 different, you know, alarms. And I just wonder if I, you know, approaching everything differently, maybe as a result of how I was brought up.
Yeah. And add to that the fact that we are just different. We are now trained and more aware as a generation, as a society, than our parents were. Like, I recently was pointing out something that my brother, thank gosh he doesn't listen to this, does. And I said, Mom, that's exactly like you. He's got to stop doing that. You got to teach him how to stop doing that. She goes, You think I know how to stop doing that? And I'm like, no, she doesn't engage in that level of analysis for herself. No. So, right. Mm-hmm. So it's a complicated thing. Well, and to your point of not wanting it to end with a bow on it and everything's perfect and you're right and I'm right and everything's great, that is the most authentic piece of it, I think, of that communication.
Yeah. That's what I was just going to say. I mean, I also feel like, to your point, Corinne, like, we do look at things differently now. And one of the things that is very different now is around communication, and this, which is the theme of your book. Like, we talk so much more in society about communication and, you know, being vulnerable and expressing your feelings. You know, they didn't think that hard about any of that, right? I mean, they just didn't. And so that's why I love that part of your novel, that it's like, not just communication looks different in different settings and contexts and different relationships. So I personally think that, or my therapist thinks that, I'm one way in the workplace, right? Like, I can be very direct. I can get these things across. But then in romantic relationships, I have a lot more trouble, right? Because that gets into emotions and feelings. And, you know, so I love that you played that out in these different contexts. And even with the romantic one with Harry, I mean, he had, he's been through his own romantic issues with his former wife. And he is being honest about, listen, I've learned from that too. And I've learned how to communicate. And so he kind of helps her learn to have conversations too. But he only learned that because he didn't do that with his, you know, so it's the theme comes through in so many ways.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah. I also think when I created this, it was mostly to focus on conflict avoidance and adulting. And I really thought that that was handled. I wanted to handle in different aspects of her life, but for sure in the business aspect of her life, she has to deal with a lot of conflict too.
Yeah.
And that just runs throughout the entire book from the beginning, where she is told by the founders of her company that her app is no good because they just don't want to put money behind it, even though it had some potential, and then kind of dismiss her. And then she decides to go out on her own. And then, of course, some drama happens where later on she sees them again. And I think for that piece, I just wanted to show that these hard conversations to be had and these things that you don't know if you should speak up, these happen a lot to women in the workplace.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, one of the family relationships or dynamics that she does is really shines through, I think, is the one with her sister. Do you say, is it Gia? How do you pronounce her?
Yes.
So we don't have sisters, me and Corinne. So I think we've said this on other ones that we really sort of gravitate towards these, the sister reading dynamics. So tell us about writing her and that and their bond and connection.
So I do have a little sister. I don't, not little, I guess she's 5 years younger than I am. And there are aspects of my sisterly bond with her that do come through, because in the story, Sarah's sister Gia, she has a lot going on her own that's very different from Sarah's life. She has, she's a few years younger. She has a business background, and later it comes up that she also has been sort of set up to be compared against Sarah by her parents, and Sarah was kind of unaware of that aspect. So while on the surface, it seems like, oh, they have fun little banter, but then you, as they have more conversations, and they kind of kept it very light just in their relationship, but as they live together, they start to kind of become more open and discuss more serious things. You get to see, and they grow together as well, and they're each other's champions, but for sure, Sarah's relationship with Gia is very special to me, because I think I have a special bond with my sister.
Yeah. And you got the younger sister down. Now I didn't know your spot in the family order, but I think I related to Gia because, you know, when they do start having these conversations, you know, I'm the youngest. So there is a lot, you know, she's basically saying we're like, you paved the way. And a lot of what mom and dad expected of me was just because that's what you did, you know? And so it's hard. The younger one, we know, Corinne and I talk about this all the time, like, everything is like in comparison to the older one. Whereas the older one is like, I don't even care. Sarah legit never thought of that. She's like, well, I'm sorry. Like, sorry. Like, I just lived my life. And now mom and dad, I don't know what they then use that as some marker or measure for you. Like, sorry. But I feel like you nailed the younger mindset as one who has that.
Yeah.
Yes. And I do have an, you know, with my order in the middle. Family. So I am the middle. So we do have an older brother.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yes. And he definitely is still very much the shining star in the family. But I had decided, instead of doing, you know, trying to set up a dynamic of a lot of siblings, just to have it be Sarah and Gia as the focus to show their relationship and their love, as well as the found family love with Casey. And I felt like having her feel very supported helped her get through the hard parts of her new venture with trying to release her app.
I want to talk a little bit about the writing process. You've already touched on some of the stories that you did in your research, but people don't think of research with baby rom-coms, but that is very clearly what you were doing. And it sounds like you're always doing that when you're looking for these women that shine in male-dominated spaces. So is that where you start? And chicken or the egg, right? How do you know, okay, now I'm going to turn to this particular industry? Is it just something that sparks your attention, a news story, a moment in time, and you think, okay, and now I'm going to go down this rabbit hole of research to use in my next novel?
Well, I'm lucky in that ideas come to me after I see am inspired by something out in the world that I've experienced. And for my first book on gaming, I was visiting a friend at one of the big gaming companies, Activision Blizzard, and she showed me a tour of the entire office, and that really got me going on, wow, this place is like unlike anything I've ever seen. But then hearing her day to day, and also how hard it was for her to even get to where she is, that's where kind of that idea came from. And the investment banking, for sure, that one was a conversation that I have a bunch of friends that are in investment banking, and they were just having drinks one night and just saying some of the things that they are, even in the year, you know, 2024, are still said in the office that are considered not appropriate, but they just are so ingrained in the culture there that hearing them talk about it so casually, they're almost desensitized to it. But I was not. So I was like, wait, what is this thing? And did you smack them? So I'm writing this all down and thinking, okay, I need to write about that someday. But for this book, because it was during the pandemic still, I was obsessed with Shark Tank and watching a bunch of those videos. And
same.
There's something about that show. I had, you know, talked to people in the industry. Plus, I had actually watched during the pandemic people doing pitch competitions and trying to pitch their business and get feedback on their business ideas. Because I think it was linked through my business school. So kind of having all that come together, that's how I got the idea for One Last Word. It was kind of taking different pieces. But usually when I'm coming up with an idea and then I have at least the industry or what kind of challenges I want this character to face, then I have to think what kind of character can handle that pressure and also be vulnerable to some degree where you kind of are in the end wanting to root for this character to get to the other end and with their happy ever after, both from the work and career perspective, but also romantically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you seem to have blended a lot of your interests, which leads me to my next question about sort of your path to publication. I mean, your bio pretty much shows the breadth of your interests, and you're a comedian. You have your MBA, as you just mentioned. You've written YA. You're writing adult. How do you reconcile or maybe bring together all these parts of yourself in your writing? Looks like you did it here.
Thanks. I think the easiest way for me to organize everything is I have a Google document or a few Google Doc documents that have different levels of tiering almost. So some of them end up being scene ideas, just because I'll run into like a coffee shop or a grocery store and something funny happens. Yeah. And I realize that's a premise, when I did stand up. It's like the joke premise, but that's not like a theme or anything like that. But I do know it's worth thinking about how to enhance it or how that can move the story along if I had a bigger story in mind. So those are one thing. And then a funny little tidbit here or there, somebody will say something and I'll go, okay, I need to just send a note to myself or write this down as something that might be a nugget of an idea, but not an actual full-fledged thing. And so I even had one yesterday. My husband was talking about, why do people call it the birds and the bees? Like, I don't actually understand how those... would those two be the one you want to use to demonstrate anything? Like,
it's a good point.
It is a good point. And I'm thinking... That is really disturbing, actually, that people still use that phrase. And why is this not moved on past that type of ecological system? You should be past this. So I knew that's not anything except a funny notion. And then that would I have to incorporate that somehow because I do write. I was writing something that was a smaller scene about a younger kid, and that could be like a question they ask and then it becomes this bigger question. And then on the high level, sometimes that I'm just, I'm able to see more of a theme. And then in that case, that becomes like an idea that I will send to my agent, and then we'll share that hook with the premise and everything. And it's just this thing that is more fully fleshed out. Whereas the other ones are just sort of funny things that didn't quite make it ladder up. So it's almost like a three-tier system. And I don't even know if anybody else would have this problem. I think as a joke writer from just doing stand-up for so long, that's just how my brain ended up kind of categorizing humor, where it was on the a joke level, scene level, and then a very high level theme that I could pitch as a story idea.
I love that.
Yes.
I love that.
Your mind works.
Yes, absolutely. Which then brings me to think, I cannot believe, I don't know if you've heard our podcast, we always talk about astrology, and I just can't, I'm having a hard time. I think, Kate, you had some clues that Suzanne, you're an Aquarius, but I can't believe you're not a cardinal sign. I'm just shocked.
Definitely an Aquarius. Yeah. I was trying to remember, like, what traits I had known to be an Aquarius and be, you know, very, I used to be very aware of zodiac sign. But then over time, I'm like, I don't know if I know enough to be on this podcast to talk about it. I did look up Cosmo.com and I'm now.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
I'm now brought up to speed. And I would say that the qualities that I think are still like kind of carry over from teenage Suzanne, who was very into zodiac signs, to now, are that I am analytical, independent, and easygoing. And fiercely loyal. After that, everything else is like, I don't know. Am I creative? I don't know. Am I, you know?
I think you're creative. I think you're creative.
Yeah. And to me, what stands out for me and connecting you to Aquarius is you could write about anything, and you always choose to write about women working in male-dominated fields. That is a very Aquarius kind of, you know, casted trait. That you know, you could do anything, and that's what you choose to do. It's very, very much like an Aquarius. But your movements and your ability to morph and change just strikes me as a cardinal sign. So I'd love to know the rest of your chart, but, you know, alas, I do not know. I will not know.
Oh, that's great. Next time. Yeah. Next time we'll have your full chart done. Well, we always like to end the show with what you're loving. If there are books, podcasts, TV shows, anything you're obsessing over that our listeners might want to check out.
Oh, goodness. I knew this question was coming, and I tried not to like force anything like, oh, I'm going to read and watch something just to talk about it. So I look back at my, what did I read or watch it during the last month? And in the last month, I did watch American Fiction, which I
loved.
I need to do that.
And now I want to read the book that it was based on. And I've never watched all the other five seasons, but my sister is like, you have to watch Love is Blind season 6. You will love it. And I had another friend out of nowhere that my investment banker friend that said, I know you don't watch reality TV or much of it, but I think you'd like the season. And sure enough, I just finished it all over the weekend and had started it, but it was just definitely entertaining. And they know my taste. I was just like, what is going on in this show? Highly recommend it. I haven't watched the reunion, but I'll watch that this week.
It always gets very real there. You know, I have watched 4 seasons of Love is Blind, and for some reason we missed the 5th, and then so the 6th wasn't on my radar, and everyone is saying the same thing. It doesn't even matter. You don't have to go back. Just start with this most recent season. I heard it's a real doozy.
Yeah, and I've had friends that have watched all of them and just said, you will love this season. You just need to watch the season. And I didn't know what they were talking about, and I'm just watching episode 1, and then it ends with a really good shocker. So at that point, I was like, I see what you're doing. I understand, and I'm on board.
love it.
But I love friends that know you well enough to know that, listen, maybe this isn't your usual thing, but I got trust you me. Here. Like, trust me. Yeah. Interesting. Yes,
for sure.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Suzanne, thank you so much for joining us. One Last Word is out now, and we are so happy that you joined us.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me. I've always been excited about, you know, seeing you all, and I'm so happy to be here, and thank you for this time with you.
So excited. Good. Thank you.
Thank you so much.